It is Tuesday, April 21st. Thank you for joining me, Menace to Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host as always. I'm really excited about today's episode. So just to preface it, this is an episode that's going to be about my grandfather, Earl Bruce. He passed away 2 years ago yesterday. And so I wanted to do a little story time, just talk about his time as the head coach at Ohio State, what it was like for me, my special guest, his oldest daughter, Lynn Bruce, who's my mother, is going to join us. And we are going to just kind of reminisce about some stories about Earl and what it was like working for Woody Hayes, what Woody Hayes was like. Just a couple icons in the history of college football, certainly the history of Ohio State football. Just want to give him his due diligence, give him his earned respect as a college football fanatic, as a college football enthusiast, as a college football analyst, whatever you want to call me. I want to keep him relevant and talk about him because 2 years ago yesterday he passed away and we miss him. So we're going to do that. We're going to get into this episode. Also going to put out a bonus episode this week, NFL draft preview. Going to be joined by Johnny Lunsford from the Scarlet and Great podcast. He's going to come on to ask me a couple questions about some recruiting, just how it works, kind of what probably happened with this whole fiasco with the kid from Kentucky that committed to Oklahoma, then decommitted and committed to Ohio State. I'm going to kind of explain what happened because I've seen it 100 times. There's a lot of rumors out there. I want to kind of let you know what I believe happened and how it went down. And then also want to talk about the NFL draft. Not only Ohio State's players, where I see them going, how I see their value, but also just the entire draft process, what's going to happen, how different this year is. So it's going to be a draft special, a little recruiting and draft. Who couldn't love that, right? A little NFL draft, a little college recruiting. But anyways, enough about next episode. Let's get to this episode. Little ode to Earl, episode about Earl Bruce. Enough intro. Let's get to the show.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
No man is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. Team.
What a hit, Denzel Ward. You got barbecue right there, and you didn't invite me.
Did you push yourself to be great today? Did you do it? If you didn't do it, you lost today.
Don't let that be standing in the way. Go away!
Menace to...
All right, welcome. Episode 95. Five away from 100. Really excited about the 100th episode, even though I have no idea what I'm going to do for it. It was a huge plan, spring game, blowout, going to be awesome, but no longer. Governor DeWine says not so fast. So I'm going to take the next 2 weeks and figure out a cool way to celebrate 100 episodes and celebrate your support of this show. So thank you for tuning in. Special episode today, personally, hope you enjoy it. And if you don't, turn it off and tune in next week. I don't really care. I'm going to just have a conversation about and just bring light to a different side to my grandfather, Earl Bruce, Hall of Fame football coach, really a Buckeye through and through, and just somebody that obviously impacted my life greatly. He's one of the finest football coaches in the history of the game, if you ask me, and if you ask people that know, people like Nick Saban and Urban Meyer and Pete Carroll that worked for him, guys that learned a lot from a man that maybe didn't have the successes that the Urbans and Petes and Nicks have had, but he really laid the groundwork and foundation for a way to run a program and achieve at a very high level. So who better to bring insight into the world and life of Earl Bruce than his oldest daughter, who happens to be my mother, Lynn Bruce. Mom, thank you for coming on.
You have to say oldest, right?
Yeah, well, you're the oldest.
I don't like to hear that.
Well, that just means that you spent the most years with him.
I did.
So
I did.
You are the oldest. That's how it works.
Yep. As well, are you.
Very true. Very true. The oldest grandson. So yep. I think the best way to start this off is I just am curious kind of what is it like being Earl Bruce's daughter?
Oh my gosh. I get asked that all the time. As a matter of fact, when I was on the Buckeye Cruise, they had a question and answer session, and Urban was up there with Gigi, and I asked Gigi. And I said, I get asked this all the time, Gigi, what do you think? And it was a exact same answer that I always give. I don't know any different.
That's true.
That's what I grew up with. That was my dad. I didn't, know anything. Although I do remember you as a 2-year-old when he was coaching at Ohio State, and after he got fired, you didn't realize everybody's grandpa wasn't on TV.
Yeah, I just thought it was normal.
You thought everyone's grandpa was on TV.
Well, that's so understandable, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of the same thing for me.
Yeah, I can relate. I can relate. What I always talk about to people and is that he was very, I guess he was a little more compassionate as a family member. Maybe had a little more understanding as a family member, but he really approached being a father, grandfather, whatever, similarly to how he did when he was coaching. I tell the story all the time about the time that my license tags were expired. So first, I had gotten in trouble at school. I think it was at school. I don't remember. Clearly, I blocked those memories out. And I thought he was going to just destroy me and rip me a new one. And he was very like, well, what happened? Tell me what happened. And I told him what happened. And he was like, we're not going to do this again. Very like even keeled, level headed. I was like, I walked out of his house and I was like, holy shit. I thought I was going to get destroyed. That was really nothing. And then like a month or two later, my license tags had expired. And you would have thought I killed someone. He just came over the table. You're an absolute dumbass. The dumbest son of a bitch I've ever met in my life. How are you going to drive around with expired tags? You're a moron. Just went off on me. And I'm like, my God, I got in real trouble like a month ago. And you didn't, like, it was a nice conversation. And now I didn't do anything, really. My license tags are expired. But he approached things passionately.
Yeah. Well, when you made a choice to do something, that's when he got very upset. You made a stupid choice.
Yeah.
And you got a way different person than I ever got. I always got the fired up, screaming at you, you made this dumbass mistake. And I never got the even keeled. Although I will say, I was thinking on the way here about a time I skipped school. I was kind of a difficult child, I suppose. He was never home, so it was always my mom that had to deal with everything. And I had skipped school with a friend in eighth grade, just walked out the side door and went to her house and did absolutely nothing. Well, we did go down to campus at Iowa State and have pizza. And that was what got me in trouble. I, like, 2 weeks later, my mom showed up at the school. I was supposed to go home with a friend for an overnight on a Friday. And she showed up at the school and said, we have an appointment with your dad. And that never happened.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, oh, crap. What did I do? And I just kept thinking in my head, okay, don't give anything up. Let them tell you what you did. Don't tell them anything. And so we got there at his office, which was at the old Cyclone Stadium, and it was a crappy office, and it was just awful. And we're sitting there waiting for him, and he comes in, and he just looked like he wanted to die. And my mom was like, what's the matter? And he said one of his players, a really good player, had just broken their leg in practice.
Oh, bad day to go.
Yeah. So I sat there, and he just looked at me, and he said, someone tells me you weren't in school. And I was like, oh, okay. And so, of course, I was grounded forever. And I found out years later, like after he retired from Ohio State, who it was.
Mm.
And it was one of his assistant coaches who had been a player for him at Ohio State that saw me at the pizza place.
Who? Who was snitching?
Tom Backus.
Tom Backus is snitching.
Tom Backus, who now is in Colorado, and he told me at this party that we were at, he goes, did you ever know it was me? And I was like, how could you do that to me? And he goes, you were going down a bad path.
I was like, oh, God. Well, I'm curious, just kind of rewinding. So for, I guess I should have prefaced this, and I will, I guess, in the intro, but my grandfather passed away 2 years ago yesterday. That's the whole reason for the timing. Obviously had Alzheimer's, very passionate about Alzheimer's research. You run his foundation now. We partnered together for the one tailgate we had, big plans for tailgates in the future to try to raise some money for his greatest passion and what you've really driven the entire time he was passionate about it. Yeah. But I'm curious, kind of take me back. So he was head coach at Ohio State from 79 to 87. Take me back to that time. What was it like, the pressures? I know that you were the oldest, so you were, first of all, you went to Arizona State as a freshman, right?
Right, yep.
And then he got hired at Ohio State.
Yep.
What happened?
So, I came home at Christmas and watching the game, the famous game, the Clemson game when Woody punched the kid.
Yep.
And my mom had actually fallen asleep on the couch, and I was watching it, and I saw Woody punch the guy, And I just went, oh my God, oh my God, mom, wake up. Woody just punched a kid. And she was like, okay. And I said, no, another team's kid, not one of his own kids. He punched
Because that was normal.
Yeah.
Punching his own player was fairly normal.
Yeah. And I said, and on national TV, I said, mom, they're going to have to fire him. Oh, they're not ever going to, they won't fire Woody. I said, mom, they're going to fire Woody. And then I looked at her and I said, and dad's going to want that job. Mm-hmm. And she went, oh. And so that whole time I was home at Christmas, they were going to Ohio for interviews and then for the announcement, and I was taking care of my little sisters. And then I went back to school. And so when I came home in the summer, I went to a whole different place. I didn't know anybody, didn't know anything. So I lived at home and sat at home all the time, basically doing nothing. But he just was never home.
Never home.
Never home, working all the time. I mean, this was his dream job. That's where he wanted to be. That's where he graduated from school. He loved it. So it was a lot of pressure. I ended up coming back, going to Ohio State, and you know, they had the Columbus Dispatch letters to the editors, and every Sunday you'd read, and I'd just get so upset. People were so mean, and it was just awful. And it didn't matter how good you were, they pick you apart anyway.
Well, that's the media for you. That hasn't changed. It's
no,
it's
just
probably
people.
Only gotten worse. So obviously he had some success early, had success towards the middle of his tenure, and then he had probably a kind of a rough year, losing Chris Carter, and obviously didn't have the year that people thought they were going to have. And then here's what I want to get into: what happened at the end? Because people, Buckeye Nation, to a man, to a woman that I talk to, always says the same thing. That was criminal what they did to your grandfather. He was unbelievable. They should have never fired him. Blah, 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 blah. We could go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And I know the story. I'm interested in your perspective on what happened. Why did Earl Bruce get fired?
I think there's a multitude of thoughts about that. I'll tell you what I knew at the time, because after he got fired, you and your brother and I went to Florida with him. Mm-hmm. To his condo with John Zonack, who was his attorney. So I heard a lot of stuff, you know, being in that condo with them late at night, just sitting there drinking coffee or having a glass of wine. And so from what I understand, it was the Wolf family, John W. Wolf, who ran the Dispatch and Channel 10 and BNS Radio. And originally when he got here at Ohio State, his television show, which nobody ever really paid any attention to, coach's show, it was on Channel 10. And at some point in his tenure, my dad liked to go to Scioto Downs and to the racetrack. And John Wolf didn't think that was appropriate and told him he needed to stop going to the racetrack. And something about Art Schliester being there, and there was the perception that my dad would take Art Schliester to the racetrack, which was never true. He never did.
Never.
But Art would be there. And my dad just looked at John W. Wolf, who basically ran the city of Columbus, and said, as far as I know, it's not illegal to go to the racetrack. I'm not losing money I don't have. I'm not devastating my family. I'm doing my job. You're not going to tell me what to do.
Amen.
And John W. Wolf said, well, then we're going to pull your coach's show. And he said, go ahead. I'll do it myself. So that's when he and John Zonack started the television show. And I think originally they were at Channel 4 with Jimmy Crum, mm-hmm. who was an old-time sportscaster back then. And they were successful. And they made money. And then they moved it, I think, to Channel 6. And that's when I started working for the television show. I sold the advertising, and we made money. And they were convinced that he never would, and they were very angry about that. And then they saw an opportunity when the season was bad and everything had happened with Chris Carter, and there was kind of a negative thought process around Ohio State football right at that time. So when they lost, I think it was to Iowa, and that the week before the Michigan game, they fired him. And it was definitely John Wolf who, you know, Ed Jennings was just a figurehead anyway.
Oh, yeah. He pulled the strings.
Pulled the strings. Yep.
Well, that's it's wild how the politics of college football have worked forever. And you saw it as evident with my situation and Urban Meyer getting suspended. There's like, who is making these calls? Like it's somebody with money that has no sense of reality or college football or anything, really, for that matter, except for maybe how to run their business. But yeah, that was my recollection, and my knowledge of it was Chris Carter played a huge role in it too, though.
Yes, he did.
Because he really devastated the team, and that was a major reason for why they had, you know, an average year. You wouldn't say it's a bad year, but at Ohio State, it definitely would be considered a bad year.
Well, and I'll just tell you about that too, because there was a time when I had been told what was going on, and I went to your grandfather and said, "Hey, he's lying to your face. He's lying to your face. I know that he has taken money from an agent." Oh, he wouldn't lie to my face. Yep. My dad believed everybody. And as great of a man as he was extremely gullible in that sense that he believed people would always tell you the truth. Yeah. And I know Chris Carter lied right to his face.
Absolutely he did. Well, and the truth came out.
Yeah.
What to take me through after, so he gets fired after the Iowa game, and then which this is something that never happens, right? Coaches nowadays that get fired mid-season, towards the end of the season, they're out. I mean, clean your office out, get out of town, whether they want to get out of town or the university wants them out of town. You never see a coach coaching a game after they've been fired, ever. I don't know that I've ever seen it, other than obviously I know this story. So he stays on to coach the Michigan game. Talk to me about that week, what went on, the emotions. I know that one of my earliest memories is when the band came to his house. Just take me through the week. What happened after he's been fired and he's going to prepare for the game, the greatest game in all sports?
Oh, boy. I think, obviously, I came home. You and your brother were staying at your grandparents' house because your dad and I were out of town. And I came back to the band walking in the street. They parted ways so my car could come through and I could get to the house, and just sitting there watching them gather on the lawn and play for your grandfather, and the tears in his eyes because he loved Ohio State. He loved the band. And so it was a very emotional time. And as a family, of course, you know, this is your loved one who has been extremely devastated and hurt. And we just told him, well, don't coach it.
Yeah.
But he was a way bigger person and a way better person than any of us ever could have been. He cared about the kids more than anything, and mm-hmm. that was his whole thing. And he went about that week like every other week in front of everybody else. But when he came home, he was devastated. When he was alone in his car, he was devastated. And it was really, I guess it told me what kind of man he really was. Mm-hmm. It was just... how somebody does that, and that was like the firing just went away. It was gone, and he would deal with it later, and he was down to business.
Down to business. It's toughness, commitment, loyalty.
Yep.
It was all about the players, that's for sure.
Yep.
Well, the I think the greatest part of the Ohio State tenure ending is the send-off, right? The fairy tale finish. He goes up and beats Michigan, gets carried off on a player's shoulders. Just talk to me about the feeling in your family, amongst with him, with your mom. Just what was the feeling after winning that game and kind of just like almost the middle finger to John Wolf?
Yeah. Well, I remember going up to the game, obviously, and we were seated amongst a bunch of Michigan fans. And you know me, I have a hard time controlling my mouth and my emotions, but
that's a fact.
There was a guy, I mean, as soon as the guy behind us that was a Michigan fan supposedly just went off on Bo Schembechler the whole time. And Bo had come out prior to my dad's firing, like the day before, and the rumors were swirling. They're going to fire Earl Bruce. And Bo said to the press, "If they do, I'll hire him."
Hmm.
That's how much I admire him and I would want him on my staff. And so as soon as Bo said that, I mean, we always loved Bo, but as soon as he said that, it was like he was golden. And this guy started going off on him, and I just turned around and I said, "You are the biggest jackass in this entire stadium." And of course, I would always get your dad in trouble because I'd be like, you know, "And if you do this, he's gonna knock you out," because I sure wasn't gonna. But it was just incredible. It was it just made you realize that, you know, God is good. There's something to be said about how he portrayed himself that last week. And you can ask any player on that team to a letter. The way he portrayed himself and the way he went through that week, just it told you what kind of person you want to be.
That's it. And I mean, I know I've interacted with, obviously, coaching at Ohio State, but just being in Columbus, I've interacted with several, I mean, 100 former players that all talk about that week and talk about what that did for them as a young man to learn from a guy that just was going through that adversity and handled it the way he handled it. And it definitely was impactful. And I think it also was why Buckeye Nation always was so receptive of him, even after the fact, because a lot of times former coaches, especially fired former coaches, they kind of, that's the end of your time with the fanhood, with the fan base.
Yep.
And it was never with him ever. I mean, the rest of his life after he was done coaching, he was in Columbus. He was doing radio shows. He was at the games. It was like, he was a beloved son of Ohio State.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why when, he obviously, his dad died of Alzheimer's, his sisters died of Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's was when he chose that as his charity of choice, everybody supported it. I mean, we had an amazing time putting together events, and former players would come and companies would donate and sponsor. And it was, I mean, he was very loved. He was very loved here. And I think absolutely he could have come back and badmouthed the university and badmouthed everybody and hated, of course, he never hated Ohio State. We did for a long time.
I know. You raised me to hate Ohio State. Yeah. I was 2 years old. When he got fired, almost three.
Yeah.
And I was raised to hate Ohio State until all of a sudden Jim Tressel gets hired and everyone's like, okay, we're cool now. We can go back to liking them. And I'm like, whoa, time out. Most formidable years of my life, you told me we hate them. Yeah. What happened?
Yeah. Well, Tress did a good job.
He flipped the family.
Yeah.
But so I'm going to take a quick break to hear from one of our sponsors, and then we'll get right back because I want to go backwards a little bit. I want to talk about the Woody Hayes tenure, working for Woody. Very few people can give perspective on what that was like, even in our family, because they were either so young or not born.
Yeah.
And so I'm interested to hear your take on Woody Hayes and what it was like when he was working for Woody, and then talk about after coaching. So we'll go backwards and forwards right after a break from one of our sponsors. Are you a football coach, or are you just a football junkie? Or do you just have to learn football at the highest level? Let us introduce you to Zone 6 Performance and Training. We have pre-launched our athlete development platform on Patreon to give you that PhD level football that any coach or super fan craves. Right now you have access to an exclusive article I wrote on ball reception, as well as a pretty wicked comparison tool for the 2019 college football season. Next week, we'll be rolling out the Coach's Arsenal 1.0 that will include 15 years worth of tools that I used in my career, from grade sheets to tip sheets to coaching manual topics, practice organization, drill work, recruiting templates and evaluation tools, and so much more. The downloadable toolbox will be available next week, and Zone 6 subscribers will get it first and at a discount. In the coming months, we will be doing an e-clinic, which will be free to subscribers, as well as offering developmental tools, including diagrams, videos, and tip sheets. Not to mention 24/7 access to me for any questions, suggestions, or requests. Zone 6 Development and Training. We are bringing the sports science and a PhD in football to all levels of the game and athlete. Check it out now at patreon.com/menacetosports. All right, welcome back. We are back in studio with Lynn Bruce, daughter of Earl Bruce and mother of me.
How lucky for you.
Lucky for me. We're talking about my grandfather, Earl Bruce, who passed away 2 years ago yesterday. Just kind of a tribute, just a story time. I thought it would be fun to listen to. No sports to talk about. I'm going to talk about the draft tomorrow in an episode. So I figured this is a good opportunity to take a break and just learn about a legendary football coach and someone that's near and dear to my heart. So I want to take it back even further. So we talked, briefly about his tenure as the head coach at Ohio State. I want to talk about his tenure as an assistant coach for probably the most iconic football coach in Ohio State history. Not probably, the building's named after him, Woody Hayes, who was definitely he was old school coach, right? And I think the unique thing that my grandfather, that your father did, was kind of transition that Woody Hayes old school program and add a little more modern flair to it, both with salaries, and not that he got paid a lot of money, but Woody never took a raise, never made any money ever, and never wanted to take a raise. And he also didn't want facilities. He didn't want anything. He didn't want any money spent. He was a frugal old man, basically. And he also wanted to run the ball three yards every down. And as much as my grandfather loved to run the off tackle power, he also threw the ball. I mean, Chris Carter, he had some big time tight ends in his time at Ohio State. He didn't not like to throw the ball, where Woody hated it.
Yeah.
And so I think that was what kind of transitioned Ohio State into more modern football. Not to say that he was the most innovative, you know, spread offense type of guy, but he definitely liked to throw it a little bit. So I'm curious, what was it like for him working for Woody Hayes?
Wow. I only know from stories that they told, because he was, again, never home. So we didn't see the only time occasionally, and it must have been my mom browbeating him to do it, he would take my sister and I to the office when they had meetings, or like on a Sunday, because they met, I mean, they always worked. So we'd go in there, and Woody was absolutely charming. I mean, he was a wonderful man. He was like a grandpa. I mean, we'd go in there and run around through the office and play on the typewriters at the day. They had typewriters, and they had a coffee station where they could get coffees, and they had sugar cubes. And, oh, God, we always wanted sugar cubes. And so Woody would say, you can have sugar cubes. And my dad would say, no, you can't. And I was like, Woody says so.
And he's the boss.
And Woody would give us quarters, and my dad would be like, don't take money from him. And I was like, well, Woody just gave us a quarter. And we thought that was great. But yeah, the stories are unreal. I mean, my dad would say that, you know, every other week he was fired.
Oh yeah.
And he was a tough man. The stuff that you hear about him in the public eye is nothing compared to the. I mean, I went out to dinner with Don Nalen and Bill Mallory and my dad one time. And
for you younger people, just Google those names.
Yeah.
Google those names and look them up, because you're talking about legends of college football and a part of history that helped build the game. But anyways, go on.
Well, they had all been assistants or worked with Woody, and they would tell stories that you couldn't believe anybody would actually behave the way he did. And it really was hard for me to accept, because I knew him as a kind, gentle, wonderful, and I knew his wife, and she adopted us as her first grandchildren, that she didn't have any grandchildren at the time. I mean, she was a wonderful person, and to hear that, you know, he threw things at people and beat his head on the wall and, you know, screamed bloody murder. Of course, you'd see it on the sidelines. And as a kid, I didn't even realize the impact. I just thought, well, yeah, that's what you do, I guess.
That's how you coach. Yeah. You go ballistic. Well, I think my favorite story that certainly hits close to home more and more every day. When I got fired, it hit home, and I thought of it almost immediately. This pandemic, it hits close to home, and I think of it immediately, was a story that he told me one time on the road recruiting. And I think the wildest part of the story is he shared a room with Woody. And I just think about my time. If I had to share a room with Urban, I would have jumped off a balcony. Like, I do not want to be around him in intimate settings, like getting out of the shower and going to bed and hearing someone snore. But it, back in the day, they were, you know, it wasn't as big time money as college football is now. So he was sharing a hotel room with Woody, and they talked or whatever. And as they were going to bed, Woody took the sheet and just said, fuck them all, and threw the sheet over his head, and then out instantly asleep. And I know my grandfather was like, what the hell was that? And so the next day he was just, it was so, his curiosity took him over. He had to ask. He said, hey, Coach Hayes, last night you said, fuck them all. What were you talking about? And he was kind of like concerned. Like maybe he was talking about me. Like, I don't know. And he was like, the fucking media. And when he said that, I was like, he said, I say it every night before I go to bed. Fuck them all. Talking about the media. So it just hit close to home, because I'm like, God damn right, Woody. I hear you. I'm every night I go to bed, I say the same thing. About media and politicians.
Well, and imagine the media wasn't even,
that was nothing.
Even close to what
it was.
It was
nothing
today.
Back then. Boy, yeah. He would be in trouble. He'd punch a media member now. But that's really cool. And it's cool to hear the softer side of Woody Hayes. You never hear that. You always hear about how tough he was, how great of a coach he was. But you never hear about the kind-hearted, you know, side that he was. And it's just meeting. I never met him, obviously, but I met Bo Schembechler a couple times. And hearing Bo, I remember Bo spoke at when Earl went into the Hall of Fame, the Ohio State Hall of Fame, Bo came and spoke at the banquet.
Yes, that's right.
And I remember, I'll never forget how he started the speech. He said, the whole time I've been here, everyone talks about how much they hate Michigan, how much they hate Michigan, how much they hate Michigan. He goes, I hate to break it to you, but we hate y'all too. Yeah. He said, I don't know if you know that or not. But he always talked about how much respect he had. And that's what I think is so cool about the history of the game, is the respect element that was there. I don't know that it's necessarily there anymore. But there was a respect element that you didn't like him. You wanted to beat him by 100, but there was a respect element. And I remember he said after Earl Papa got fired, he said, I hate losing to Ohio State, but I didn't hate it as much today.
Yep.
And just a testament to those old school coaches, because Bo and Woody were definitely paved the way for guys like Earl Bruce to come, who then paved the way for guys like Urban Meyer to come. You know, it's just funny how the tree grows and the apples just keep falling down the tree.
Yeah.
And similar things were always prevalent in, I know, the program that I was a part of for 12 years or whatever it was. So I want to just fast forward to after coaching. He comes back to Columbus. Talk to me about what he was like. I think he was a radio personality, right? He was on the radio, was known as a fiery, intense guy. People loved his passion, loved to listen, sometimes got a little too passionate. Talk about him on air.
Well, I did a lot of going to listen to him on air because we always promoted the Beat Michigan tailgate on his radio show, Buck's Line. And so many times I'd be sitting there and honestly, he'd go off on something and the guys on the panel would look over at me and just be like, what do we do? And there were several times that I'd have to go up and say something to him, one in particular after Penn State and Joe Paterno. And I knew he was hot about that. And just my mom sat him down and she looked at me.
Because Joe Paterno was a friend.
Was a friend. And another one of those old school guys. They were a very tight community. The guys that were in that group were very tight. And, you know, whatever that all was, whatever it was, my mother told him, don't talk about it. It had just happened. And she said, don't talk about it. Just keep your mouth shut when it comes up, because he can be a chauvinistic as hell and just very outspoken, obviously. And man, I told Matt McCoy, I said, please don't. And he goes, well, we have to. And I said, well, he's not allowed to talk about it. So, you know, just make sure. And honest to Pete, he started going off and I was just, oh my God. And I went up there and it was Stan Jackson and Matt McCoy and my dad. And I can't remember who the other person was up there. And at the break, I went up and I just ripped him. I said, you need to shut your mouth right now. You can't say that stuff. You're going to upset people. You don't know. Your voice isn't the only voice. You don't know everything that went on. You need to shut the hell up right now. And he just looked at me and he went, I can say what I want.
He could.
And I said, well, no, you can't. You need to be quiet. Mom is listening and she would not be happy about this. And he just gave me this growly face and walked away. And the next break, Stan Jackson comes over to me and he goes, I have never seen anyone talk to your dad that way. That was awesome.
Well, I remember I was at Florida as a GA and we were playing Florida State, the iconic legend, Bobby Bowden, right?
Oh,
in
yep.
Florida State. And we're there and Papa Earl comes down to go to the game. He comes down to see Urban, see me, watch the game. You know, he's now retired and he wants to see a great football game with one of his former coaches, the head coach of Florida. So we come down and I remember we're in pregame warmups and I went over to talk to him kind of before things got crazy. And I probably wouldn't talk to him again until we got home. And so I went over to talk to him and mid talking to him, they're in pregame warmups. I mean, things are going on. The buzz is going. The stadium's filling up. I mean, it's like it is showtime. And all of a sudden he goes, oh, Bobby. And he starts walking on the field to go to the 50-yard line to talk to Bobby Bowden. And I'm sitting there like, you know, I don't look at him like Earl Bruce. I look at him like my grandfather. And I'm like, holy shit, you can't go on the field right now. What are you doing? And he walks his ass right out there and just talks to Bobby Bowden. I think they were about to kick off. And Bobby's like, hold on, I'm not done talking.
Yeah.
Just had a nice conversation with old Bobby Bowden, his buddy.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is going on here? It was definitely a different experience. I know that personally it was very cool to get in the industry that he so loved and devoted his life to, and having him come. I mean, he went everywhere I ever was. He came to Marshall, came to practice. He really liked Doc Holliday. He went to Temple with Steve Addazio. He loved Steve Addazio.
Yes, he did.
He still,
yeah.
I mean, to this day in heaven, thinks Steve Addazio is one of the finest football coaches he's ever been around. So he used to come all the time. He just loved being around the game, and he loved seeing me coach. And then going to Ohio State was uniquely different because of, obviously, his passion for Ohio State. And I've mentioned it on the show. I mentioned it when Greg Fry came on. It was always – I always got the unique Earl Bruce, where every other coach, Urban, everyone else, they got the bite his tongue Earl Bruce, right? He's not going to tell them how to do their job. He's not going to tell them anything. He would just come in and was happy to be in a meeting. He'd sit in staff meetings and stuff like that. But the minute we walked in my office, boy, that filter was gone. And he would talk about how our defense was dumbass for this and why the hell don't we throw to the tight end? And, I mean, he would let me have it. Mm-hmm. And I used to sit there like, I don't call the plays. I certainly don't run the defense. Why are you yelling at me?
Well, was it Michael Thomas that he was kept yelling at you about? Why aren't we getting the ball to Michael Thomas?
Oh, yeah.
That's my guy. Why aren't we? And you'd be saying, don't talk to me.
Yeah, he loved Michael Thomas. And all the time he was like, why are we not throwing it to number three? I don't understand. And I would always look at him and say, neither fucking do I. What do you mean? I'm with you. I'm telling him, throw it to him. And it just doesn't happen very often. Like, I'm with you. You're bitching at the wrong person right now. But it was definitely unique. Definitely a cool experience for me, having Earl Bruce as your grandfather. I know it had to be cool, but it challenging also to have your father be in the college football world. And I know that's part of my ambition to not.
Well, and that's one of the things that I say all the time when people ask me about that. I mean, we had so amazing opportunities presented to us. We got to travel a lot. My sister and I used to always go on a one-away trip with the team. That was just always so much fun. And bowl trips and, you know, all the stuff that you as a kid is just incredible. But our dad was never home.
Never.
My dad never was around for my prom pictures or anything that I did. I was a cheerleader, never came to see me cheer. Never, you know, I rode horses and showed horses that he paid for, and he never came to see. He came one time. But, you know, that's the sacrifice that as a child of, particularly nowadays, I would imagine too, a premier football program coach. Yeah. It's just, you don't get a dad.
And people, you know, people all the time talk about what does it take to be a college football. I mean, great high school coaches, it's very similar. I know he was a great high school coach. I mean, one of the finest high school coaches in the history of the state of Ohio. It's not like coaching it in college is all of a sudden, now I work a lot and these high school coaches just work an hour or two and leave. I mean, it's similar time commitments, similar hours. I think the travel and off season is the only difference. But it's definitely taxing on a family. It can be done really well. It can be done the right way. But I definitely, you know, that was his one sentiment that before he passed away, obviously long before because of Alzheimer's. But he that's the one thing he told me. He said, I regret not spending more time with my family. That was his one life's regret, right? Not giving his family one day a month, right? Yeah. Just to show them how much they meant to him, because you get caught as a college football coach, you get caught up in it. You're in this world where everyone else is doing it. It's almost, it's sad to say, it's almost like a drug addiction.
It is.
It's like everyone else is doing it, so it's normal.
Yeah.
And then being on the other side of it, no, it's fucking not.
No, it's
and
not.
It's really not. Like, I get to go to baseball practices, baseball games. I get to work with my kid in the backyard. Never in the world did I get to do that before. Maybe like occasionally, once every 3 months. So I could go on for days why I don't want to coach football ever again. It's an awesome experience. I loved it. I love working with players. I know he did too. But when someone that has that much success has that regret for the people that mean the most to them, it was eye-opening for me, for sure.
Yeah, but, you know, and I guess because we were girls, I was a little different. And I hate to say that. It sounds real sexist, but it is. It's just different. And when he would be home, particularly as we got older, and he'd be home like on a Sunday and he'd want to like clean the basement. We'd be like, what? No. We've got this under control. This is not what we're doing. I mean, we just tell him, you go back to work then if that's what you want to do. But yeah, I'm sure he did regret that. But then being particularly at his funeral and after he passed and hearing the impact he had on the guys that he worked with and the guys that played for him and knowing some of them really well and personally, it just makes you know that, man, well, maybe that was what he was supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, cause he was a great dad. He was a great grandfather. He was a great person and you knew he loved you and he'd do anything for you. But, you know, he made an impact on a lot of people.
An impact that will resonate for generations. And then, you know, it's an impact, it's an immeasurable impact. I mean, not only on lives, players' lives, then that transitions to their kids, but also the landscape of college football, which is a big topic. I mean, just the coaches that worked for him that he impacted. I talked to a dozen of them all the time, and it truly was one of the greats when it came to college football, coaching, how to do it the right way, caring about players, and being tough, being hard on people, hard conversation, honest conversation, one of the legends. So I thank you for coming in and coming on the show. Just wanted to give a little personal touch to the life of Earl Bruce and a monument in college football and Ohio State history. So thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. I'm not going to end this show the way I normally do. I feel like he would smack me if I did. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate it. Hope you were entertained. Hope you took something from the story. Hope you a little softer side, not as much analysis, more stories. So thank you for tuning in, and we will see you tomorrow for our NFL draft and recruiting episode.
Gil Elliott, and he's got an opening. Elliott, off to the races. Can they catch him? No, they can't. Touchdown, 85 yards.
It's so easy to be average. It takes a little something to be special, Don. It takes a little something special to be a great player.
Braxton Miller's loose. Spin move. Miller headed for the end zone.
We don't want to coach average. I don't want to be around you. Why be around average?
We're going inside him. We're going outside him. Inside him, outside him. And when we get him on the run once, we're going to keep him on the run. And we're not going to pass unless our secondary comes up too close. But don't forget, man, we're going to get him on the run. We're going to go, 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 go. And we are to the stop until we go to that goal line. Don't forget, man, today is the day we're going to win.
Menace to...